The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Do you distrust the American people so much that you need to know when they bought a couch or a cow? I am astounded by what you're supporting and proposing.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis. She was talking about a proposal, a proposal financial institutions to report to the IRS on transactions over $600. You probably heard about this. I mean, I don't know about you, but $600, think about how often that sum or anything greater than that might pass through your bank account, right? Maybe your kids need tires, or they need to fix their car, or they're behind on their rent payment, or maybe you and your wife have separate accounts and you're transferring money from one account to another. Can you imagine having the IRS, the Biden administration right now is talking about, taking $79 billion of this country's money to amp up the IRS, to embolden it, and you'd have a lot more, I think, IRS agents poking around in people's bank accounts. I also think it's going to be really a difficult thing for small business, too. Just as a side note, I once ran a small business, and I know, the amount of paperwork and accounting and things that go into that. And can you just imagine the amount of audits that would be underway, what it would cost small businesses, the time, the money, things along those lines. So, but that's one of the proposals President Biden is putting forward to help pay for this $3.5 trillion debt. We're going to look at that coming up a little bit later. So maybe at the bottom of the hour, we'll dive into whether or not the IRS will be peeking into your finances. And we'll also take a look at where this will all lead. I mean, what's it going to look like if the debt ceiling is raised and if we see this $3.5 trillion, 5.4, whatever it's going to be, bailout take place. What's it mean for the future? We'll look at that. Hey, I want to talk COVID real quick, okay? Very quickly with you for just a second. I saw a story over the weekend, and gosh, there's so much happening here with COVID. Merck has just announced that it has a new antiviral drug, and this is going to be used against COVID-19. What's so special about it? It's going to reduce hospitalizations. They claim it could reduce deaths by 50%. There was a double-blind study taken, right? And they show that if you take this pill, 5 days, of getting the first symptoms, so you come down with your chills, your fever, whatever it is, you lost your sense of smell or taste, take the pill. It's going to cut the number of people going to the hospital or dying from COVID in half. Let me get you plugged in. NBC News was reporting on this.
Another potential breakthrough in the fight against a pandemic. Drug maker Merck announced Friday that its new experimental pill, the first of its kind, cuts the risk of hospitalization and death by 50% when given to patients recently infected with the virus.
This is a pill. You can take it home and it will significantly reduce the risk that you either ultimately are hospitalized or, more importantly, that you would ever face the unfortunate outcome of death.
Currently, remdesivir is the only approved antiviral drug in the U.S., but it needs to be given by IV or injection. Merck says it will seek emergency use authorization as soon as possible for its pill.
This is a potential additional tool in our toolbox to protect people from the worst outcomes of COVID.
All right, so a lot is underway. All right, we'll see what happens. I hope it's true. I hope it's good. I hope it will save lives. They're going to seek the approval of the FDA and other agencies around the world. The problem that this presents, though, for Merck, they also make ivermectin, right? And we've talked about ivermectin in the past. A lot of people are wanting this prescribed. I actually have a friend who's a physician. He's been on the program. You've heard Dr. John Littell here before, and he was writing a lot of these scripts. They're actually, they're now threatening to take away his ability to do that. It's a very cheap drug. A lot of doctors are prescribing it for early treatment, which they say is very effective. Again, I'm not a physician, but this is what some physicians are saying works. Dr. Anthony Fauci called this new drug that Merck has, he says it's, quote, quite impressive, end of quote. you know, as you heard there in that CNN package, other experts are saying that, you know, the most effective, you know, this might be the most effective, you know, way to treat the virus, you know, after the vaccine. But they still say the vaccine is number one, that you should be vaccinated. I know there's a lot of controversy over whether people want to get vaccinated or not, but vaccinate first and take the pill second if you get symptoms. In California right now, we got to pray for this state. And I've been saying that on a number of different levels. Crews are trying to clean up a spill. There was 126,000 gallons of heavy crude oil that leaked in a pipeline, and it apparently started leaking late Friday or early Saturday. And wildfires, of course, you know, are threatening that state as well. It's being impacted. Crews have deployed booms and other measures to try to contain it. Others are working right now to clean up the animals. You ever seen that video footage of these animals that get covered in all of this oil? It's really quite tragic. But Southern California beaches, they're facing what many are saying is an environmental disaster. And a lot of oil was spilled. How much? Take a listen to CBS 2 in Los Angeles.
Obviously, all of this started on Friday, believe it or not. That's when folks started smelling the oil in the air. And by Saturday morning, they realized that there was, in fact, a pipe that was leaking. There were skimming boats yesterday, grabbed up about 3,100 gallons of oil off the ocean. More than 2,000 feet of protective booms have been set up around the wetlands and Huntington Beach into Newport Beach as well, as boaters reported smelling that leak as early as Friday. And by Saturday, marine life was seen swimming through the slick as it made its way to shore. It is believed that at least 120,000 gallons, possibly closer to 130,000 gallons of oil leaked from that pipeline of the offshore oil rig from Friday to Sunday. The pipe is connected to Platform Ellie. It's believed to have sprung a leak around 4 miles off the coast. But with so much oil out there in the ocean, everybody is doing their part to protect the shore, try and keep it away and keep swimmers out of the water. And so everybody is asked to stay out of the water all the way from the Huntington Beach Pier down into Laguna Beach. And many of the beaches themselves are closed as well, including all of the county beaches in Orange County, the state beaches, the beaches in Laguna, and the beaches up in Huntington Beach. And many are just very concerned that they see so many people not heeding the warnings and getting in the water anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand why you want to do that, but you know, the governor there, Gavin Newsom, over the weekend, he issued a mandate requiring all eligible school students to get vaccinated against COVID. So, you know, California now, in addition to dealing with so much on the natural calamity front, is still in the fight against COVID. And if you've got a kid that's going to school, I don't know where you stand on the vaccine. He says, you know, since they're required to have vaccination for all kinds of other diseases, they should be required to get COVID-19 as well. And he believes that other states are going to follow suit, that he's a leader in this. And of course, Governor Newsom has not counted on, you know, that order possibly being the last straw for some parents. A lot of people are leaving the state of California. So we'll see how that plays out. It might be. He might be the trendsetter. We'll see what happens across the country here. Speaking of politics, you know how divisive it can be, right? I saw a story, and this is a little disturbing. We've lost respect. We really have. We've lost respect for each other. There has been a diminishment in civility in our country. And it really is tragic. I'm all about dialogue and exchange. That's what this radio program's about, right? People will call with opposing views. We dialogue in a spirit of charity and in an effort to come to a deeper understanding of the truth. That's what it should be about. When it comes to politics, not like that at all, right? People are entrenched in their worldview. Nobody listens to anybody else. And now, instead of saying reaching new highs, I would say this political harassment's reaching new lows. A couple weeks ago, after the Supreme Court allowed Texas, you know, the heartbeat law to go into effect, a bunch of protesters, they targeted a Supreme Court justice, you know, Justice Kavanaugh. He was at home. And they went there and started harassing him. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, I saw some video of him over the weekend. He was on his houseboat what's the river there in D.C., Patrick? I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think that's where his boat was. It doesn't matter. But last week, you know, a group of people in kayaks came up and other small boats, and they started yelling at him to pass this $3.5 trillion bill. So here you are relaxing at home. That's where he stays when he's there in town. And, you know, you can't even be in your own place. You know, you can't leave your work and come home for a little, you know, rest, relaxation, clarity, personal time, whether you're a Supreme Court justice or you're a senator. But it went further down this weekend. And I really think this has got to stop. This is really tragic. Somebody who is apparently in our country illegally, right? They're not here legally. They followed Senator Kyrsten Sinema. She's a Democrat, right? She and Manchin have been opposing this $3.5 trillion bailout. Manchin is from West Virginia. She, of course, is from Arizona. And this illegal followed her into the ladies' room and then started to harass her about her vote on the $3.5 trillion package. And the woman wanted the senator to vote for the bill because in the bill, and we'll talk about this coming up in just a minute here too, there are a lot of different provisions, right? And it would essentially grant amnesty to people like her in that situation. But here's the real issue. Not only did the woman follow the senator into the bathroom, I understand wanting to express your views and have that personal touch with the senator, but she followed her into the bathroom, and she videotaped her. We videotaped this conversation. She had this encounter, and then she posted it online. Listen to this.
We need solutions. The Build Back Better plan has the solutions that we need.
We knocked on doors for you to get you elected, and just how we got you elected, we can get you out of office if you don't support what you promised us.
We need 7 million citizenship for 7 million. We need the Build Back Better plan right now.
My name is Blanca. I was brought here to the United States when I was 3 years old.
You get the point. I won't go through it all, but that's where we have descended. It just shows how far people in this country are willing to go. Apparently didn't bother President Biden. He says, you know, it happens. Here's the thing. It shouldn't happen. We should, I really believe, have respect for one another. And I think, as I said, we have lost civility in this country. Let's start to take it back. You know, you might not agree with what somebody else says, but let's at least have an honest, open dialogue and try this for a change. You know, I try to do the same thing. I try to listen and try to understand where someone else is coming from. You know, there's a lot of issues that we are divided on. There is a truth, you know, there's a greater truth to some of these issues. And I think if you honestly, openly, civilly dialogue, I think you can come to a deeper understanding of that. The fall term right now, I want to talk about what's coming up because this is a big year for this country, a huge year. The fall term for the Supreme Court started today. And it started off with a bang. Of course, we have this water right issue between Tennessee and Mississippi. I've talked about that in the past. The reason it started off with a bang is that Justice Clarence Thomas, he broke his customary silence. And he asked the first question of the term. And this is actually the first in-person session they've had since the outbreak of COVID. And it should prove to be a pretty contentious term. There are three cases that are now getting a lot of attention. One on gun rights. The other is on religious liberty. And the third, you know, is the one on abortion. But those are the biggest hot button issues of our day, right? Abortion, gun rights, religious liberty, they're all up there. The gun rights issue, that case involves New York requiring people who want to conceal and carry a weapon, you know, having a good reason to want to do that, according to the state. But, you know, a citizen is challenging that, saying, hey, the Second Amendment doesn't allow the state to say what the good reason is, you know, what a good reason is or not. So we'll see what happens there. The religious liberty case, that comes from the state of Maine, and it involves school tuition payments that the state makes to private schools in very rural areas of the state, but which they won't send to parochial schools, right? That doesn't seem fair, but it's going to come before the court. We'll see how they decide. Of course, we know what we've been praying for. The Rosary Cross of America, Father Rocky, every night now has been in this novena leading up to hopefully a victory for life in this country. The abortion case that comes from Mississippi and the one that could very well overturn Roe v. Wade, that is the one that the Supreme Court is going to be diving into. And we just are praying the rosary, and we're praying the chaplet, and we're praying together. And I hope you're fasting and sacrificing for the end of the culture of death in this country, too, that the Supreme Court justices will be able to see clearly and rule wisely. I've invited today a distinguished senior fellow of ethics and public policy, or I should, it's senior, let me try that again, a distinguished senior fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Dr. Ed Whalen, to join us. And it's good to have him back once again. Hey, doctor, great to have you. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, but thank you anyway.
So good to have you here. Hey, I'm just curious about why Justice Thomas was so quick out of the gate to ask that question. You know, in fact, I know there's a whole series of questions, but I was struck by that. I just want your take on that. He was almost always silent before this year, and now we see him being much more verbal.
Well, I think the format of oral argument during the COVID era, in which justices would take turns, meant that he didn't have to interrupt people all the time to ask questions. I think that was one of his objections to the way oral argument ordinarily occurs, just so much interruption. He'd rather hear from counsel. So I think that with the additional structure, he obviously thought it sensible to go ahead and ask questions, and he, you know, has brilliant insights into these cases. So it's always good to hear from him.
Yeah. So let's talk about these three cases, just and like your take on how you think they may roll. The gun rights case seems to be pretty cut and dried. I mean, can a state decide if your reason for carrying a gun is good enough? What's the criteria for that? How do they evaluate that? So how do you think that one will shake out?
Well, yeah, and the big problem there is New York State doesn't define what proper cause means. It has an unusual law, at least 43 states, as I understand it, allow carrying arms for self-defense. The petitioners argue the right to carry should be the rule, not the exception. They recognize that, of course, there are instances in which some people should be denied permission to do so, but that New York law makes it effectively impossible for anyone to carry a handgun for self-defense. So, my guess is there'll be a majority ruling striking down the law. How broad the ruling will be, I don't know. I haven't followed this case all that closely, but my guess is the court will recognize that, of course, states can implement rules that would bar dangerous folks from open carry and concealed carry. The case actually involves concealed carry, but I think that the particular challenger here is likely to win.
So your take on Maine, the case from Maine, I think it can seem kind of confusing. Wouldn't the state paying tuition for parochial schools in rural areas, some could argue, be supportive of or establishing a religion type of thing, or not at all? And you think that that'll go the other way?
I think this is going to be an easy case for the Supreme Court. The facts of the case are, I think, even worse than you indicate. Basically, what Maine is saying is that if you live in an area where there's not a public high school available, Maine is going to provide tuition assistance for you to attend another school. But Maine excludes from eligibility schools that it deems to be sectarian. Right. So there are indeed religious schools that receive support, but Maine is drawing a line between non-sectarian religious schools as well as other private schools on the one hand and sectarian schools on the other. And I think it's pretty clear, given the court's recent case law, that this isn't going to stand. So I think this will be a fairly easy victory for religious liberty.
Two down, one to go. The biggest one of all. And, boy, this, I was talking to a friend earlier today about the Dobbs versus Jackson Women Health case here. What it might mean for overturning Roe v. Wade. He says, look, if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, you're going to see riots worse than you saw during the death of George Floyd. I don't know. I hope we don't see that. What do you see happening here? Professor Robert George is predicting that Dobbs versus, that Jackson Women's Health, that they're going to overturn it. He's optimistic. He sees it being a 6-3 decision. And who knows? That's just his estimate. But how do you read it? And what do you think is going to happen if it does get overturned?
Well, I agree basically with Professor George's assessment. There are six justices on the court who know that Roe versus Wade is a crazy ruling. Roe removes from the political processes the authority to establish laws on abortion. States had that authority when the 14th Amendment was adopted. Roe and Casey was a case, as you know, decided in 1992, where the court by a 5-4 vote refused to overrule Roe and basically said, we're resolving this issue finally for the nation. Well, that's been a failure on its own terms. That, by the way, was the very year that I clerked for Justice Scalia. I saw there was certainly intense pressure on the justices, and there'll be intense pressure this time too. We see it already. But I don't think there's any middle ground between ruling that the Mississippi 15-week ban is impermissible and overturning Roe and ruling that states have broad discretion to regulate abortion. I don't think this case allows for any coherent right. middle ground. Now, maybe some justices will try to find it. I just don't see how it's there. Yeah. It would be just a huge betrayal of conservative jurisprudence for the justices to go south on that. So I sure hope that doesn't happen.
So how do you think it'll shake out? 6-3, or you think it'll be unanimous? The law's bad law. So I mean, what do you think?
Well, I hope it's at least 6-3. Actually, Justice Breyer, who believes that one should look to foreign laws to construe the meaning of the Constitution, ought to also vote to uphold the Mississippi 15-week ban, since that ban is actually more permissive than typical European laws. I'm being a bit facetious here, as I don't expect him to do that. But I hope very much there'll be 6 votes. I can't believe that Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor actually believe that Roe was rightly decided, but I also don't expect them to acknowledge that. Look, the key thing to understand, and the reason why there shouldn't be riots in the street, is that overturning Roe is going to restore the authority of the states to regulate on this matter. This is something we can work out state by state. It's not something that's going to that any of us is going to be entirely happy with. You already have states, New York, for example, that have by statute adopted radical pro-abortion laws. You'll have other states that are going to offer significant protections. You're going to have a period of a few years where this all shakes out. But in the end, it's going to, if the court does overturn Roe, this issue will be removed from national politics in a way that enables the people of their states to enact laws that better reflect their own moral convictions.
Well, I appreciate your time, as always. I'm grateful for your insight. Before I let you go, and I have about 30 seconds for this, are there any other cases we should be watching that come before the Supreme Court this round?
Well, you nailed the big three that I had in mind. We should recall, though, that the court has at most half or so of its docket selected now. There are cases in the pipeline, including a racial preferences case involving Harvard University, in which the court might grant review. So we'll see what else gets on the docket.
Well, thank you, Ed. Always good to talk with you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Drew.
Again. God bless you. It's Ed Whalen. I've got to take a quick pause here when we come back. Let's change gears. I don't know whether this concerns you or not. It seems that if this the Biden administration gets its way, $79 billion will be funded to embolden the IRS and give them the ability to peer into your bank account for any transaction over $600. We'll take a look at that. We'll also take a look at what this $3.5 trillion cradle to grave welfare state bill is, and that's really what I want to call it, because it does cover everything from child care to practically the end of life. We'll talk about what that's going to cost. Nobody's talking about the long-term effects of this, and I want to give you a perspective on that. So stay with us. We're back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It is good to be with you today. Just trying to bring you up to speed on some of the biggest news stories of the day, give you a perspective on them, and maybe some analysis. You're more than welcome to join us, too. You can dial in 888-914-9149 if you want to get in. We'll take calls in a few minutes, though. Let's talk about this $3.5 trillion bill for a moment. Right? I was just thinking about Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona, somebody following her into a bathroom because they don't like how a politician is voting for a particular bill. They record it and they put it up online. I think it's absolutely horrible. That's harassment. It's just, you cross a line, you go too far. You know something's wrong in our country when we have lost respect, when we have lost civility, when we're going to go to that extent, when we don't like a particular bill or a policy. So as you heard at the very start of the show, that's exactly what happened with Senator Sinema of Arizona this weekend, because the senators, one of two, she and Joe Manchin, they're holding up the passage of this $3.5 trillion bill that the Democrats have proposed. And they want this bill, which has all kinds of money. You know, and I don't know what your politics are, and I know people get mad. Oh, you're talking politics. This is not politics. This is about the future of the country. This is about America. This is about what policy can do to the future of our economy, what this policy can do for the future of your children and for their welfare. And that's why I think we need to look at it. I think we need to be good stewards of the gifts that God has given us. I think we also need to be very careful about debt. We know what Scripture tells us about debt, you know, over and over again. So what happens here? So, you know, we've got $3.5 trillion that's being proposed, and Democrats want the bill. It has, as I said, it has everything in there from free community college to the expansion of Obamacare to free daycare, a whole litany of other social programs. And they want it to be passed using a process called reconciliation, which would, it only requires a simple majority. You need 51 senators, which, of course, the Democrats have, with Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote because of the way the Senate is split right now. Most bills in the Senate normally require about 60 votes to pass, right? But the reconciliation process bypasses that requirement. So you don't need 60, you only need 51. You need that majority. So instead the, you know, inside the bill, just to let you know what else is on there, there's a provision, and a lot of people are unhappy about it. Now, I don't know why this needs to be put in there, but, you know, we can talk about that. In order to help pay for the $3.5 trillion, they need to generate more tax revenue. Where's that come? That comes from you. You know, nothing is free. You know, when you start spending money, when you start giving it out like crazy, who doesn't want all the benefits that this thing talks about? I do. But it also has to be paid for. I mean, who doesn't want a new car every year? You know, who doesn't want a house, you know, on the ocean or the French Riviera? I mean, that costs money, right? Nothing is free. If you want it, you got to pay for it. And part of the bill would require, this is really what has people upset, banks to report the activity of any transaction in your bank account that is more than $600. Whether it happens with loans, right? You go get a loan, whether it happens with businesses or your personal account, you know, you're transferring some money to your kids or to your spouse or whatever, right? It would also require a report where more than $600 of activity takes place in a year. So even if you have a balance of $500, if there's been more than $600 of activity over the year, the bank still would have to report that to the IRS. Now, how do you get through all that? I mean, that sounds ridiculous, right? I mean, well, I guess you hire more IRS agents, right? That's why you need $79 billion. I mean, I can just think of the misery this is going to cost a lot of families and a lot of small businesses. And not everybody's happy with it. There was this back and forth with Wyoming Senator Cynthia Loomis, and she had the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. They were going at it about the proposal to have financial institutions report to the IRS these transactions over $600. Listen to the exchange. I'll share part of that with you, and then we can talk about it. Listen.
My question is, are you aware of how unnecessary this regulatory burden is? Do you distrust the American people so much that you need to know when they bought a couch or a cow? I am astounded by what you're supporting and proposing. I think it's invasive. I think privacy for individuals is getting ignored. And I think treating the American people like they are subjects of the government is unconscionable.
Well, Senator Loomis, I really disagree with the assessment that you have, and I think you misunderstand the proposal. Banks already report directly to the IRS the interest that they pay on accounts when it exceeds $10. And this is not a proposal to provide detailed transaction level data by banks to the IRS. It is a proposal to add two additional pieces of easily ascertained information on to the 1099 INT form that banks already file. And I think it's important to recognize that we have a tax gap that's estimated at $7 trillion over the next decade. And
well,
additional information would help.
$600 threshold is not usually where you're going to find the massive amount of tax revenue you think Americans are cheating you out of.
That's correct, but it's important to have comprehensive information so that individuals can't game the system and have multiple accounts.
So are that many people cheating the government out of their money? I'm not. Are you? I mean, is that what I'm hearing here, that they think citizens of the country are deliberately out to cheat the government? I love what the senator had to say. She says, you know, you're treating the American people like they're subjects of the government. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people, right? This, to me, gives me great pause. And there's a lot more to the bill than what I just shared with you. That's why it's being held up right now in the Senate. I've invited Todd Van Orman to join me today. He's an assistant professor of economics at the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. It's good to have him on the air with us today. Professor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Appreciate you having me.
I'm delighted to have you here. I'm looking forward to talking about this. And if you want to join the conversation too, feel free to dial in. We'll take your calls at 888-914-9149. Hey, right now we're seeing massive inflation in the country, right? Our economists are attributing that to, of course, the Fed printing more money and to the federal government giving out all that cash to everybody. And prices are rising. I mean, I just filled up my car the other day, and I couldn't believe how much money it cost. I'm thinking, gosh, I didn't really realize it. People are feeling this in the grocery stores and a lot of other places as well. What are you seeing right now? Are we beginning to see inflation in this country? And let's talk about that first before we get to some of these other issues.
Sure, and I think you are starting to see some inflation, and at a higher rate than we're used to. For years, I know the Federal Reserve always shot for kind of a 2 to 2.5% inflation rate, and we're starting to see pretty significantly higher than that, maybe around 5%. Of course, that shifts month to month, and there's some cyclicality to that as well. Yeah. But it is higher than we're used to, and I think you hit on the major pieces of that. You've got the monetary policy side, which is the Federal Reserve increasing the number, just the amount of dollars out there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what we're talking about today with the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, that's the fiscal policy side. And so you kind of have both of those pieces pushing in the same direction. Kind of the what a lot of people are saying or economists are saying at this point, or maybe at least the Fed is hoping, is that it's transitory, just meaning that it's temporary. But oftentimes with that inflation, wages go up as well, and so it'll be interesting to see if wages increase, if that inflation rate does come back to a more normalized rate.
Yeah. My understanding of inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods, right?
That's the major piece of it.
And we see a $3.5 trillion package being proposed. So if Congress passes a bill, you know, costing $3.5 trillion to the country and all these free programs are offered, I don't know how we don't enter into some sort of very serious state of inflation in this country. What do you see happening if this much money is printed and handed out. I'm just trying to get my head around it. I look at some of the things in the list, and some of them are really good. Others, I think, are crazy. But your thoughts on that? What do you see coming?
Well, and I think the concern, and I think that's where I would fall, is that, you know, it might not be that transitory because, as you say, it's too many dollars chasing too few goods, and it doesn't really matter where that spending is coming from if they're chasing the same goods. So whether that's from consumer spending, which, you know, is still the bulk of our economy, or if you now have this increase in government spending, it's still more dollars chasing the same amount of goods, and we're seeing supply side issues as well, where, you know, cars might go up because they can't get computer chips or whatever it happens to be. So both slowing on the supply side and increasing on the demand side, that's going to drive inflation higher.
My guest today is Professor Todd Van Orman. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. I'll go to the calls in just a moment. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about this $3.5 trillion bill that's being proposed, and you might have heard a lot about it. You don't understand what the holdup is, and you might think, hey, some of this is good. You know, the promise of free college, free childcare, you know, free medical, dental, and vision, you know, all these benefits, a new universal pre-K in entitlement, and the president says it's all paid for, right? It's not going to cost anything, is what they're saying. It costs $0, this campaign. What are you worrying about, America? Right, Professor, let's talk about that statement. I'm sure you've heard, several of those. You heard the president and other people who are advocating for this program say it doesn't cost anything. Can you explain that to me? How does this not cost anything when clearly we're looking at $3.5 trillion?
Sure, and I think they're looking at it from a couple different perspectives. First off, I know there's some changes in the tax code that come along with that, and so whether that's changing the marginal tax rates or whether that's the actual rates themselves or whether it's changing the buckets, right, entering into those higher tax rates at a lower income, that's part of it. I think anytime you see a spending bill like this, you've also got some assumptions for economic growth in there. And whenever you're assuming economic growth, you're projecting into the future, and it's really difficult to do that. And so, that tends to be both sides of the aisle will try to to put that in there. But, you know, it's really tough to get to that point where you can actually say it's a net zero cost.
Let me do this. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this $3.5 trillion spending. I'll tell you what we might see in the not too distant future. Also, let's talk about the ability for the IRS to take a look at your bank account. We'll get into that and more. Of course, the chaplet comes up in 15 minutes as well, so we'll pray together. You can get online and definitely invite somebody else to pray with you today, okay? Giving you a look at life. More when I return. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show. Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, the promise of free college, free childcare, free Medicare, dental and vision benefits, you know, universal pre-K. Whole lot of other things. It all sounds good. Who doesn't want that, right? But let's do this just for a second. If you're just joining me, it's good to be with you today. I'm speaking today with Professor Todd Van Orman. And we're just looking at this $3.5 trillion bill that there is a battle over right now. Congress is deliberating over another record-breaking spending bill. And look, I if you're like me, it's easy to get very complacent about dollar amounts that you really can't comprehend. I mean, the amount of zeros in a trillion is mind-numbing, right? It's crazy. But there was I think it was Jason Chaffetz. He wrote a piece a couple days ago that I had seen, and he he laid out a good case. He says, look forward 5, 6, maybe even a decade from now. Look down the road into the future. What do you get for the $3.5 trillion? Dollars that's being spent, your taxpayer money that Dems want to spend right now. According to the Wall Street Journal, you know, we're going to quickly wish, you know, the tab had only amounted to $3.5 trillion because the Journal's editorial board, they estimated that once the budgetary gimmicks are all exposed, you know what the real cost of this bill is going to be? This is the Wall Street Journal, not me, not anybody else saying this. They're saying the real cost of the bill is going to be about $5.5 trillion. $5.5. Why? Well, do you remember how Obamacare was supposed to make health care cheaper and more accessible? 11 years later, the data that they have, when they looked back at what it cost, showed that Obamacare had more than doubled health insurance costs. It had more than doubled health insurance costs. And what experts are saying is that you can expect more of the same. You know, the American Dental Association expects costs in the industry to go up once Medicare covers dental. That's because the program it's not means tested and reimbursements are so low, and dentists, you know, they're going to be expected to provide, you know, care to cost to millions of Americans who can afford, you know, private plans or self-pay. So to stay afloat, what do? They need to make up the revenue somewhere else. And then take a look at child care or community college. And don't be surprised if American colleges begin adopting some of the same cost-saving strategies as, you know, European higher education is doing. That they limit who can go. You know, they can limit who can go into major lucrative fields. And you know, they get rid of extracurricular activities. Your campus will be bare bones. So there's no doubt state taxes are going to skyrocket within the next 5 years. And, you know, those entitlements also, they expire. They're only covered for the first few years, after which your state is expected to pick up millions of dollars of the tab. Nobody's talking about this. Or, you know, if they are, I don't know who's listening, right? If the state doesn't have that, what happens? Guess what? Your taxes are going to go up. And who pays the taxes? You, the taxpayer, right? So I think you're going to see steep cuts in education, transportation, public safety. There's going to be cuts all over the place. And it goes on and on. One other thing here, then I want to get back to the phones and to my guest here. What about your Social Security? What about Medicare? I was thinking about this earlier. Medicare is expected to be insolvent in just a couple of years. We've talked about this a month or two ago. They say by 2026, that's right around the corner. Social Security by 2033. And I don't think it's going to happen. Somehow we seem to always resolve this. But with this bill, Medicare is going to be expected to cover the cost of dental and vision care, not just for the poor, but for every American over 65. So what does that mean for the future? Look, I can go on and on, but let me bring into the conversation my guest, Professor Van Orman. And Professor, you know, that's just some of the ripple effects of what will happen here. And I don't want to be too negative. I want to be honest. I think we have a responsibility to care for our brother. I'm all about health care. I think everybody should have access to it. But when we're spending this amount of money on some of the things that they are proposing, free community college and a whole litany of other things, it does give me some pause. So, you know, your thought on this, these, in my opinion, really aren't free programs. I think the costs are going to be, you know, a lot more. And there are many that are sounding the alarm that the bill could really push us down the path, not just to socialism, but to communism, and I don't know, maybe that's being extreme and too dire. That's what some are arguing, and I'm just trying to get to the truth here. I'd love your honest evaluation.
Sure, and I think what I would add on to what you said before is that whenever you put a program in place, it's hard to get rid of that, right? And so somebody, as you said, has to pick up the bill into the future. And there are ongoing costs. These aren't just one-time costs that we're making. It's going to cost, you know, $3.5 trillion now, or whatever the number happens to be. But there's going to be ongoing costs that you need to focus on. And I guess in terms of, you know, economic capitalism versus right. Socialism versus communism, anytime you centralize that, it's just hard, right? Anytime you centralize power to the government and them knowing what each person partially wants but also needs. Those are always some of the challenges with a communistic society is you centralize the decision making, and it's really hard for any centralized organization to know what 300 million people need.
You're right. Let's do this. I have a few moments. Let's grab a couple calls. Maria is listening in Chicago. Maria, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a concern about the $600 reporting, amount mm-hmm. because I make quite a lot of, donations to pro-life causes, upwards of $600. I just put right. a check in the mail to David DeLayden, Center for Medical Progress, for $1,500. Wow. George Orrick is threatening to put him in the pen again. Right. And it's like an ongoing challenge to keep those attorneys that work for him funded so they can do their work.
So Maria, what's your question?
So my question is, can I do like a two checks for like $599.99. That's right. Under 600.
Yeah, good question. So her concern is, can you stay off the radar of the IRS by staying under that $600 threshold? Or at the end of the year, you know, if more than $600 worth of transactions go through your account, or you're flagged anyway? But your thoughts on that, Professor?
Sure. And so the way I'm understanding the bill is that they would add debits and credits and all the way through. So anytime you had more than 600 going through the account total, they would be looking at that. And just taking it from other regulations that have been in place for years, the USA Patriot Act, now the threshold for that is a lot higher. It's $10,000, but they will aggregate that. So and the way that one works is if you try to structure it to stay under, it's actually illegal specifically to structure to try to avoid that reporting requirement. And so I suspect that this would probably fall the same way just based on what past regulations or how past regulations have been set up.
Gotcha. Jacob is listening in Wisconsin. Jacob, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Hey, you're very welcome. My question was just that with these reporting requirements and how we've heard recent news on Pandora's box, like the breach or the hack that was showing people that are, you know, using offshore tactics, you know, putting their money different places to evade taxes. And we know a lot, some of the insider trading that has been shown by politicians in our own country that are getting away with all these different financial exploits that you and I would get in trouble for. I'm an investor myself personally. Now, I have friends in Russia that, you know, their government, every so often they have to go report what they made every so often or every year, and they're supposed to sit in a room with somebody. Now, my question is this is digital, right? But how much closer are we getting to that point? Because if we're just letting these big fish swim away and we're focusing on these people that are just scratching by, right, how much closer to a totalitarian government are we becoming?
Yeah, great question, Jacob. Thank you. Todd, I'll let you respond.
Well, I think obviously you have the issues of I don't think anyone's trying to keep tax evaders safe. I think what we're looking for is, you know, everybody wants to pay the fair share, and that's fair. But I think the totalitarian, tough for me to speak today, is something to think about, right? Because now you're down to 600. Most of us have at least one account where you're going to have more than 600 in transactions over the course of a year. Some of us, I'll say I have multiple accounts. My kid has a savings account for that.
Right.
The concern I would have would be how much are they going to get out of that data? And that's part of it. And the other part of it is some of those costs are going to get passed on to consumers. A bank has to figure out how they're going to put together those systems to do that if they're required to do so. And that tends to get passed on in higher costs to consumers as well.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Jacob. I appreciate it. We'll go to Kathy listening in Savage, Minnesota. Kathy, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew.
Hi,
Kathy. I just was listening and I just thought of what we witnessed in Argentina and Venezuela. I mean, Argentina and Brazil when we were there on pilgrimage. And it's, you know, to me, it's just obvious it's never worked anywhere. And we saw the worst, you know, ghetto places and things like that. And it's like, all we have to do is just look at where it doesn't work. And it never has worked.
Right. Kathy, thank you very much. Professor, I want to give you final thoughts. And also, please let people know how they can follow you and get plugged into your great work.
Sure, and just kind of responding to that last comment, I think there tends to be a kind of a grass is greener thought behind everybody. They, you know, we see the problems that we have in our country, and so everybody says we gotta have a better option somewhere else. And so it's just easier to kind of look at that grass is greener. But to look at the University of Mary, go to umary.edu. Love to talk to any students that are out there looking. But I'm always happy to talk about this too. So if anybody has questions on it,
thank you. That was Professor Todd Van Orman. We'll pray the chaplet when I return.